Shravanam, hearing. Kirtanam, chanting. Vishnu, of Lord Vishnu, not anyone else. Smaranam, remembering. Padasevanam, serving the feet. Archanam, offering worship. Vandanam, offering prayers. Dasyam, becoming the servant. Sakyam, becoming the best friend. Atmanivedanam, surrendering everything, whatever one has. This 23rd and 24th verse go together, so this is just the 23rd. We'll read the translation for both. Prahlad Maharaj said, hearing and chanting about the transcendental holy name, form, qualities, paraphernalia, and pastimes of Lord Vishnu, remembering them, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering the Lord respectful worship with 16 types of paraphernalia, offering prayers to the Lord, becoming His servant, considering the Lord one's best friend, and surrendering everything unto Him. In other words, serving Him with the body, mind, and words. These 9 processes are accepted as pure devotional service. One who has dedicated his life to the service of Krishna through these 9 methods should be understood to be the most learned person, for he has acquired complete knowledge. These 2 verses are contained within the various instructions of Prahlad Maharaj, which are his response to his father's question, this time the second time he came back from the so-called Gurukula, which was really the Asura Kula, where his teachers, Shandanamarka, sons of Shukracharya, the seminal Smarta priest of the demons, were trying to instruct him in diplomacy and politics so that he could follow in the footsteps of his father, Hiranyakashipu. So the first time that Prahlad Maharaj came back to his father, he and his father asked him, what's the best thing you learned in school? He wanted to hear about how he was imbibing the instructions of, regarding politics and diplomacy and dividing and conquering, and basically taking advantage of others' weaknesses to exert your own false ego over them, which is what Hiranyakashipu wanted to hear. But Prahlad's first instructions were very personal to his father, that as far as the best thing I've learned is that one who has fallen into the deep, dark ditch of material life should give up such a degraded condition and go to the forest, and specifically he should go to Vrindavan and take shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. So Hiranyakashipu was a little amused as well as being disturbed, and he sent him back to the Asura Kula with the instructions to the teachers to beware of Vaishnavas who come there in disguise and pollute his intelligence with these pure teachings of Krishna consciousness. So this is the second time he came back home after his teachers were very vigilant to make sure that he was not being influenced by the words of any Vaishnavas. And this is amongst the various verses in his reply to his father the second time. He asked, what's the best thing you've learned in school this time? And this verse is amongst the most important of Prahlad Maharaj as far as the answer to the question, what is the most important learning? Here it is in one verse. So today we're on the 4th item, Padasevanam. So we'll read from Srila Prabhupada's purport on that item. According to one's taste and strength, hearing, chanting and remembrance may be followed by padasevanam. One obtains the perfection of remembering when one constantly thinks of the lotus feet of the Lord. Being intensely attached to thinking of the Lord's lotus feet is called padasevanam. When one is particularly adherent to the process of padasevanam, this process gradually includes other processes, such as seeing the form of the Lord, touching the form of the Lord, circumambulating the form or temple of the Lord, visiting such places as Jagannath Puri, Dwarka, and Mathura to see the Lord's form, and bathing in the Ganges or Jamuna. Bathing in the Ganges and serving a pure Vaishnava are also known as Tadiya Upasana. This is also padasevanam. The word tadiya means in relationship with the Lord. Service to the Vaishnavas, Tulsi, Ganges, and Jamuna are included in padasevanam. All these processes of padasevanam help one advance in spiritual life very quickly. Om Ganatanamandasya Ganajana Shalakaya Chakshunan Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaya Dadati Sapadantika He Krishna Karana Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastate Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavanishwade Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Srivastadi Gaur Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vanchakalpatribhyasya Kripa Sinnavevacha Patitanam Bhavanivyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. In the purport which we have just heard, where Srila Prabhupada explains the process of padasevanam, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, he includes a definition and instruction, and Srimad Mahaprabhu's important words regarding tadiya, meaning things in relationship with the Lord, where Srila Prabhupada includes that which he repeatedly emphasizes throughout all his teachings, echoing the important teachings of Srimad Mahaprabhu, that which actually goes back to the original words of Sri Krishna, where he explains the process of worship in regards to what is most dear to him. Sri Krishna says that those who worship me, meaning directly, are not really devotees at all. But those who worship and serve my devotees, tadiya, those dear, those in relationship with the Lord, those who worship and serve my devotees, Krishna says, are the actual devotees of my heart. So it is actually very arrogant and impudent to think that we could serve and please Sri Krishna directly, because there is only two personalities. There is Lord Balaram and Krishna Lila, who is Nityananda Prabhu and Gaur Lila, who serves the Lord directly in the four out of five primary rasas. But even they consider themselves to be offering their service to the one who alone directly can serve and please Lord Krishna, which is Srimati Radharani. So for anyone else to think that because we are jiva, which means infinitesimal, how much love can we actually offer to Krishna? And how much of his love can we receive in return? So what is the question of actual rasa, of actually pleasing Krishna in any substantial way, or actually receiving his blessings, favor, and love? Because we're so limited. But according to the principle of ashraya, the shelter-giving devotee, which is ultimately Srimati Radharani, whose depth of love is infinite, and therefore whose expression of that love towards the jivas in the form of compassion is infinite, whose infinite mood of love and compassion is the cause of the appearance of Lord Gauranga and the nature of his own identity. Srila Prabhupada emphasized service to the servant of the servant of the servant of Lord Gauranga means maid servant of the maid servant of the maid servant of Srimati Radharani. And when our love is offered through his dearly beloved, it becomes magnified by her touch. And as insignificant as we are, if she recommends a devotee, Prabhupada's own words, if she recommends to Krishna, this is such a nice devotee trying to serve you, then Krishna accepts us as his very own. And then we also become included in that category of tadiya, those things in relationship to the Lord, who are dear to the Lord. But it's all by the mercy of the Lord, which is personified in Srimati Radharani, in Krishna Lila, in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna in the mood, with the complexion of Srimati Radharani, bestowing Krishna's infinite love out of his infinite compassion. And Srimad Mahaprabhu emphasized in his words and deeds not service directly to Krishna, but cultivating the mood of servant to the servant to the servant, with emphasis on humility. When Vasudev Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya after accepting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is Brihaspati, the priest of all the heavenly gods, who took birth on earth prior to the advent of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, wanting to be part of his entourage and to serve him. And he opened a school, an academy, in Vidyanagar, within the realm of Navadvip Dham. And he taught many disciples who became famous in their own rights as masters of the various branches of learning taught by him. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the master of all realms of Vedic wisdom, had complete mastery of the six philosophical schools, who was lacking, and Navadvip Dham was the emporium of all learning and culture for all the world, with the exception of one branch of learning, which is the Nyaya, the school of logic, which excelled in Mithila. And the Mithilese pundits would not allow their textbooks to be taken out of Mithila, lest that emporium of that branch of learning be diminished. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya overcame this obstacle by going there and studying and mastering all the teachings of those texts, learning them by heart, taking them back to Navadvipa, and under his patronage, and by being instructed by him, the school of Naya excelled into what became the Navya-Naya, the new school of logic, which excelled the previous school. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who is the master of all branches of knowledge. But he was thinking deep within his heart that my teaching, all this dry knowledge, will simply drown Gauranga. He will not be pleased. And therefore, if I am really to be his servant, he will have to call me. He will have to take notice of me. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya did something that is not to be followed or imitated. He became the most learned pundit in Mayavad, the school of Shankar. And he was called to Jagannath Puri by Maharaj Prataparudra to be his court pundit, which he accepted. Understanding that by assuming the role of a Mayavadi, Mahaprabhu would have to come and deliver him. So, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, also in the Shankara school of, from his preceptor Keshava Bharati, and then in the ecstasy of separation from Krishna, was journeying to Vrindavan, but was guided by Nityananda Prabhu instead to Shantipur, where at the house of Advaitacharya, Mahaprabhu could meet the devotees from Navadvipa who were just would have been too devastated by his just leaving Bengal. So they came there. And Satyamata, such a pathetic, heart-rending scene when she saw her beloved Nimai with all this beautiful cascading locks of black hair flowing across his shoulders and chest was shaved off. And his beautiful attire and jewels were renounced forever in preference to the drab garb of a sannyasi. Her heart was just shattered to pieces. She was heartbroken. And Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his most complete and perfect form of humility, fell prostrate, dandavat obeisances at her lotus feet again and again, and crying, was pleading with her that, my mother, I'm just a man. I had no right to take sannyas and leave you. You who have nurtured me with your love and raised me and trained me. And now I've done a crazy thing which I had no right to do. So whatever you instruct me, I will follow. If you tell me to come home, I will obey. And she says, I can't do that because then people will criticize. But if you go to Vrindavan, I cannot live. So my humble request is a compromise. You go to Jagannath Puri. Because then people will not criticize that you came home, but we can still hear news of you because Navadvipa and Jagannath Puri are like two rooms in the same house. People are always coming and going. And by hearing news of you, we can sustain our lives. So then Mahaprabhu, after spending some days with his associates from Navadvipa at Shantipur, proceeded to Jagannath Puri. And entering the temple of Jagannath and calling out, my Krishna, come. And then he just fainted on the floor as he proceeded to the altar to embrace Lord Jagannath. And the guards thought, this man is crazy. They approached to beat him and throw him out of the temple. The Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was there. And he said, desist, you fools. And he observed the condition of the Lord and saw that all life symptoms were suspended. There was no indication of breathing or heartbeat. But still he was lustrous. So taking a fine cotton swab and placing it before his nostrils, saw that the finest particles of cotton were moving very slightly. And he was encouraged. He is still alive. But he is manifesting such an exalted level of devotional ecstasy as can be possible only for a Nityasiddha, an eternally liberated associate of the Lord who has for some reason come down to earth. So he had his disciples carry Mahaprabhu to his house. And then the devotees arrived who couldn't come with the Lord because of the incident of Lord Nityananda's breaking his danda. So they arrived and heard all this commotion about the sannyasi who lost his life symptoms, and they were very anxious. So Jagadananda, Mukunda, Lord Nityananda, Chandrasekhar, before Vaishnavas, met Gopinath Acharya, Sarvabhauma's brother-in-law, who knew some of them from Navadvipa. He's at my brother-in-law's house. So they came there, and they were very disturbed to see that there was no life symptoms, but having a kirtan, that kirtan revived the Lord, brought him back to external consciousness. And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya became very attached to the Lord. But when he began inquiring about him, where's he from? He's from Navadvipa Don. Well, what's his family? He descended from the illustrious Nilambar Chakravarti. And then hearing that, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was my classmate in Navadvipa. And therefore his father, Jagannath Mishra, is a very respectable personality. So he felt some kind of parental bhav toward the Lord. And then when he heard that he took sannyas in the line of Keshava Bharati, he said, that's lower class. So he told Gopinath Acharya that a number of things. He said, he's a very glorious personality from a very glorious line, family. But the Bharati Sampradaya is second class, and he took sannyas at such an early age, 24 years old, with such a beautiful personality, he will have great difficulty maintaining his vows. The Matijis will come and be attracted, and it will be too different. So I will have to instruct him in such as to be very fixed in Vedanta. And I can also reinitiate him into a higher class sampradaya of sannyas. Gopinath Acharya told his brother-in-law, you fool, he does not need your protection, your instruction, what to speak of initiation from you. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what? You know who you're talking to? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, learned in all the six treaties of Vedic knowledge? The knower of all the scriptures? Where is it stated that the Lord comes in the Kali Yuga? Prahlad addresses him as Triyuga, meaning he comes in three of the four yugas. There's no avatar for the age of Kali. Gopinath Acharya replied that Triyuga means there's no Leela avatar in the age of Kali. There's a Yuga avatar in every age. But what Prahlad means addressing him as Triyuga is he does not assert himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he comes as a devotee, as in the mood of the servant of the servant of the servant. And then Gopinath Acharya is becoming very irritated with his brother-in-law, and like, you're feisty, almost. It's the ghosty, we're just discussing, there's no need to take so personally and become angry. Gopinath Acharya said, because you have not received one drop from the ocean of his mercy, you cannot recognize the Supreme Lord even though he's staying in your own home. What makes you think you received this? Because I can recognize him. So, but the Lord, so humble. We'll get back to this principle of padasevanam when we discuss the quality of humility, which is the very foundation of devotion. The Lord, although the greatest personality, complete in all divine opulences of wealth, all strength, all glory, all beauty, all knowledge, all renunciation, the greatest personality is the most humble. When he heard how the devotees were so upset by Sarvabhauma Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was saying, he said, why are you upset with him? This is so good. He wants to protect me. He wants to instruct me. You should appreciate his devotion. And then when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya took the Lord to the temple of Jagannath and began instructing him in Vedanta for 7 days continuously. And after the seventh day, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was perplexed. Dear Sri Krishna Chaitanya, I cannot understand your mind. You've been hearing Vedanta from me for 7 days continuously, but you do not make any comment, you do not ask any questions. I'll paraphrase a little bit, but basically he was wondering, why are you just sitting there with this bored look on your face? And Mahaprabhu replied, "What? Do you understand or not? I cannot tell." And Mahaprabhu replied, I can understand these sutras of Vedanta, which are self-luminous like the sun at midday in all its splendor, but it's your commentary which I cannot understand, because it's like a dark cloud which has obscured the sun and I cannot understand what you're talking about. I said, well, why didn't you ask some questions? So then, can you explain better? And then when Mahaprabhu explained the Vedanta in its self-luminous form, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was astounded. And then when Mahaprabhu recited the verse, the famous Atmaram verse, that even those who are liberated, they become attracted to the qualities and the sweetness and the beauty and charm of Sri Krishna. He said, Can you elaborate on that verse? And Mahaprabhu said, I would like to hear your explanations. And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, seeing an opportunity to regain his self-esteem, explained the Atmaram verse in 9 illustrious ways like no one had ever done before. Brilliant academic presentation. But Mahaprabhu said, there's another way to appreciate this verse. And then Mahaprabhu explained it in 18 novel forms of his own, all emphasizing bhakti. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was astounded. He never heard such erudite scholarship. And his former parental bhav, which inspired him to protect and serve the Lord, became mixed with a tremendous upsurge of reverence. Who is this person now? Is this Brihaspati? Is this Lakshmi? Is this the Supreme? Is this actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Who else has such learning, such wisdom to explain things in such a way? And then Mahaprabhu revealed to him his forearm form as Vishnu and his two-arm form of Krishna. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya surrendered. Then he became the disciple. And he asked, amongst the nine processes of devotional service, what is the most important? And Mahaprabhu said, hearing and chanting the holy name is the most important. That is the Yuga Dharma. And there's a Yuga avatar in every age of Kali who propagates the Yuga Dharma. But one in a thousand ages of Kali, the Lord comes in his original form. And when the original complete form of the Lord takes upon his shoulders the task of preaching the Yuga Dharma, the Yuga Dharma is contained in what he offers, but so much more, which you could call Prema Dharma. He is giving pure love of God, which only the son of Nanda Maharaj can do. When Balabhadra came to Jagannath Puri, after having met and served the Lord of Prayag at the Magh Mela, and Mahaprabhu accepted him as a great devotee. And Balabhadra, meeting the Lord again in Jagannath Puri, offered that famous prayer, Kali Kalera Dharma, Krishna Nam Sankirtan, Krishna Shakti Vinanahe, Dharma Prabhatana. In the age of Kali, there is no religion other than the chanting of the holy name. Unless one is empowered by Krishna to spread the holy name, he cannot be widely successful. It's a verse which we can also appreciate in regards to Srila Prabhupada's mission of spreading the glories of the holy name worldwide. And then he quoted Bilva Mangala Thakur, that other than the son of Nanda Maharaj, who can actually bestow pure ecstatic love for Krishna? He was glorifying Mahaprabhu with very appropriate verses. And Mahaprabhu, in his utter humility, responded in a way which would teach Balabhadra how to become more exalted in his own devotional service. Mahaprabhu replied that actually any devotional virtues you may see in me is only because of I have been blessed by the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Advaita Acharya. And by serving him, I have been blessed by that great Acharya with knowledge of the path and process of devotional service. And Sri Nityananda Prabhu, the Avadhut, is just mad with ecstatic love for Krishna. From him I have understood the ecstasies of devotional service. And Sri Ramananda Rai, by his instructions I have understood something of the mellows of devotional service in Vrindavan. And I've been blessed by the association of Swarup Damodar, by whose mercy I've understood something of Madhurya Ras. And Mahaprabhu just began glorifying all the devotees, and Acharya Ratna, and Acharya Nidhi, and Sri Gadadhar Pandit. And hearing the glories of the devotees of the Lord from the lips of Mahaprabhu himself, Sri Balabhadra, who was accepted by Mahaprabhu as a great devotee and a learned scholar, but Mahaprabhu detected there's a tinge of pride in his heart. And he wanted to purify him of that. So hearing the glory, the exalted glories of the devotees of the Lord from the lips of Mahaprabhu, Balabhadra felt like a duck in the assembly of regal swans. Or like a glowworm in the presence of the sun, he became very humbled. He said, I want to meet these devotees. And he did. So what Mahaprabhu is emphasizing is humility. How is humility expressed? In service to those things that are dear to the Lord. If we think that we can directly serve the Lord, that we're so dear, that is a very arrogant presumption. The Lord is pleased. Actually, Mahaprabhu instructed Sanatana Goswami that it is only humility can actually attract and purchase Krishna. Vyasadevan Gaurlila is both Vrindavan Das Thakur and Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. Vrindavan Das Thakur explains the Yuga Dharma in a twofold manner, which is very significant. The chanting of the holy name in service to the devotees. So, chanting the holy name is the foremost aspect of devotional service, but it must be complemented by service to the devotees. And that is what is being emphasized in this part of the purport, where Srila Prabhupada is commenting on Padasevana, serving those who are dear to Krishna, the Vaishnavas, Tulsi, Ganga, and Jamuna. And Krishna himself, in that great calamity, when the four Kumaras had just cursed Janmijaya, the deepest truths are often revealed in the midst of the utmost crisis. And at that time, the Lord was revealing his own heart to the world in a wonderful verse. Lord Narayan is explaining to the four Kumaras that actually any potency or virtues in myself is only due to my inclination to serve the devotees. The purifying effect of the holy Ganges, which delivers the world from sins and emanates from my feet, is purifying, can deliver pilgrims of their sinful reactions, only because I, the source of that Ganges, am the servant of the devotees. And the goddess Lakshmi, who never leaves me, although she's chanchala and never stays with anyone else, she stays forever upon my chest. Why? Because I'm the servant of the devotees. Any good in me is only due to my serving the devotees. This is the Lord's own words. And he's instructing us what should be our mentality, our mood in devotional service. And Prahlad Maharaj, in response to his father's questions, what's the best thing you've learned in school, he begins by offering his obeisances to his spiritual master and the Lord himself. So, and because of that deep humility in his heart, Prahlad Maharaj, he was never disturbed. He never criticized. He never blamed anyone, even though he was subjected to such persecutions at the hands of his father and his agents, who tried to kill him in so many ways, seeing him as an enemy because of his taking up the path of devotional service. And Prahlad never ceased to serve his father in utmost humility, with utmost respect, by giving him instructions on devotional service. So, the foundation of Padasevana service to those things dear to Krishna is humility, which is personified in Prahlad Maharaj, and is the prerequisite for forgiveness and acceptance and tolerance. Humility means no envy, no vengeance. And this quality alone has the capacity to purchase Sri Krishna. When Brahma prayed to Lord Krishna after what he considered to be a great offense of stealing away the calves and cowherd boys, he prayed to Lord Krishna, "Please, I know that you will again take birth on the earth. I want to serve you, but please arrange that my birth in that Leela will be so humble that it will not have this pride characteristic of the universal managers, the demigods. Please arrange a birth for me to instill a deep sense of humility in my heart." And Sri Krishna replied to Brahma. This is interesting, because when Brahma prayed to Krishna for forgiveness in Vrindavan, Krishna just basically ignored him. He didn't even respond. And Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that Sri Krishna, he was so distracted, thinking, who is this four-headed personality? What is he talking about? I have to find the calves and cows. I can't figure out, listen to what he's saying. Rama was devastated. Krishna hardly acknowledged his existence and did not respond in any way to his prayers. And he was thinking, Krishna will return as the golden avatar. I must seek the favor of the golden avatar who is more merciful than Krishna. So going to Navadvip Dham, performing severe tapasya there, when Mahaprabhu appeared to Brahma way before his birth, he told him, he answered Brahma's prayers regarding his desire to take birth. Such a humble birth. Mahaprabhu said, I will arrange that you take birth in the Yavana family. Very degraded. No reason for pride taking birth in the Yavana family. Although Yavanas do become proud, they have no reason. Nobody has any reason. Whatever any of us has is just due to Krishna and others. Does a puppet have any right to be proud if he's dancing very nicely? It's not his doing. The living entities in this world are just being controlled by the puppeteer Maya pulling the strings of the gunas, and we just dance accordingly. And if we do something proper and devotional, all credit, all glory goes to the Vaishnava, Sri Guru and Gauranga. And with that kind of humility, one can be empowered. So Lord Gauranga told Brahma, I will arrange your birth in a Yavana family. You will still be glorious for chanting 300,000 names of the Lord every day. In your life, you will be seeing my pastimes. And when you leave this world, you will be seeing me face to face. For now, act as my disciple and serve me thereafter eternally as Srila Haridas Thakur, the Namacharya. What was the depth of his humility? That when he was ordered, because he couldn't stop chanting Hare Krishna, he was sentenced by the Yavana authorities, religious authorities, because of, to be beaten to death in the most humiliating fashion of public execution in the marketplace. And the Kazi said, if sometimes someone survives the beating in the marketplace, drag him to the next marketplace and do it again, because nobody ever survives two. They dragged him through the 22 marketplaces of that town. He did not die, but they were astonished to see that he's smiling in great happiness, chanting Hare Krishna. And the intermittent moods of sorrow was only in reflecting what will happen to these tormentors. And he was praying to Krishna, please forgive them. Such forgiveness of his whole team of executioners could only arise from a heart so steeped in deep humility. Humility means no envy. When there's no envy, there's no vengeance. When there's no vengeance, there can be forgiveness. When there is no envy, one can offer all credit, all glory to others. This is Trinada Pisyamichena, Torara Pisyamichena, Amanida Manadena, Kirtaneya Sadahari. What Mahaprabhu emphasized amongst his eight instructions as the one verse so important, so crucial and integral to the chanting of the holy name, that you should thread it on the string of the holy names and wear it always around your neck so you never forget. The proper quality for chanting the holy name, the proper mood for approaching the holy name, feeling oneself more insignificant than a grass blowing in the street. Srila Prabhupada, all the acharyas have emphasized the wonderful pastime of Krishna sending Uddhava to Vrindavan with a message to console the Vrijavasis in their separation from Krishna. And when Uddhava came thundering in on his golden chariot, wearing the garland placed around his neck by Sri Krishna, and looking very much like Krishna himself. And when Vrijavasi saw it, is it Krishna? Oh, is it Akrura? He's already taken away our lives. Why would he come back? Oh, it's Uddhava. And when Uddhava arrived to deliver a message from Krishna, with full knowledge that he was the most intimate devotee, the best devotee in Dwarka. It's true. He was the most intimate, best devotee in Dwarka. When he arrived in Vrindavan, he came to realize the significance of Krishna sending the message with him, which is not so much to console the Brijavasis, but it was a message to himself regarding his belief, which was true, that he was the best devotee. But arriving in Vrindavan, he came to feel he was not a devotee at all. When he found that land of Vrindavan was flooded with the tears of the gopis who were incessantly crying in such piteous love for Krishna. He had never experienced such love. He had never seen such devotion. And in comparison, he felt like he wasn't even a devotee at all. But the important lesson, which our acharyas, since time immemorial, have repeated as the perfect expression and personification of humility, was at the end, Uddhava prayed to take birth as a blade of grass, so that he could be trampled by the lotus feet of the gopis on his head. And by receiving some of that dust, he would be blessed with a particle of their bhakti. But what does this imply? Uddhava, the greatest devotee of Dwarka, who had such an intimate, loving relationship with Krishna, when he saw the far superior devotion of the gopis, he did not want to take their position. Envy means you want to take the position of something. Where does it start from? We're envious of Krishna because he's the supreme enjoyer. We want to be the enjoyer. You're envious of Krishna. Therefore, you come to the material world. There you're envious of anyone who excels you at being the enjoyer. Envy is the basic ingredient of material life and false ego, which brings us to the material world, which keeps us in the material world, which impedes our progress in devotional service. And if you see a devotee excelling and you want to take the position of that devotee, you're still envious. Humility means if you see someone excelling you in devotional service, and the devotee sees everybody is excelling him in devotional service, you want to serve those devotees. And Uddhava is the emblem of this humility. He did not want to become a gopi. He did not want to usurp their position. He wanted to take the humblest position of service and submission under their lotus feet, become blessed by those who are most dear to Krishna, to also become dear to Krishna. So a devotee must be very vigilant, lest the only real demons in all the creation, which is the lust, anger, greed, pride, illusion, and envy, which try to take over our minds. And as Prahlad Maharaj told Hiranyakashipu, other than one's own mind, there is no enemy. The outer manifestations of enemies are just reflections of what's going on in our own minds. No enemy can harm us from without. Only when they, take over the dominion of our own mind, when our own mind becomes infected with lust, anger, greed, pride, illusion, envy, it becomes your worst enemy. It becomes like a ferocious beast of prey. And the scriptures give analogies that, you know, when you capture a ferocious beast of prey, you're very, very vigilant that it's just not going to destroy and devour you. So the mind, when it's been subdued, you must not ever become slack. You must ever be vigilant, lest the holy name again try to kill you by leading you away from the processes of bhakti. So, but how is it possible to control the mind? Arjuna says to Krishna, it's more difficult than controlling the wind. It's impossible, and it is. The one who surrenders to Hrishikesh, the master of the mind and senses, by dint of that surrender, Sharanagati is not like surrender on the war field when you're just overpowered and to save your own life you lay down your weapons. Sharanagati means you're overpowered by love. It's a loving movement of the heart to take shelter of one, the only one who can conquer over that lust, the original arch enemy of the living entity. The only one who can conquer that is Madan Mohan. By his superior sweetness, beauty, and charm can captivate our hearts. So we surrender to him in love. And when we surrender to him, he protects by taking charge of our mind and senses. And what are the mind and senses really doing? They're just looking for pleasure. But like an animal running after a mirage in the desert, thinking we can attain that mirage, it just recedes forever over the infinite horizon. It's a mirage. You can't reach it. You can't enjoy it. It's an illusion. Even Vishwamitra Muni, such a powerful mystic, he was always defeated by his own mind until he surrendered to Lord Ram. And then he found satisfaction. Satisfaction is found only in Bhagavad Bhakti. And bereft of that satisfaction, our hearts will always be yearning and searching, but never finding until we surrender to Krishna. So the wonderful quality of bhakti, it's not an ascending process dependent on your own abilities to rise above your own imperfections and limitations and shortcomings and defects. It's a descending process of invoking Krishna's mercy to help us and protect us. And Krishna's mercy is addressed by name, Hare, which is the vocative for Hara, who is Radha. And the vocative call means, this is a desperate emergency crisis situation, calling upon the holy name, Hare. And when she is pleased, because she is most dear to Krishna, then Krishna is purchased. So, a mantra is a form of address to the holy name, which is as yet inaccessible. Mahaprabhu has made the holy name available worldwide through his dearmost agent, Srila Prabhupada. Senapati Bhakti dispatched to those far off distant lands of Yavanas trying to flee the mercy of Lord Gauranga. And Srila Prabhupada, he perfection of humility in his prayers on Daladutta, his praying, glorifying his own spiritual master, that great soul Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who won by his order, the world will be flooded with the holy names of Krishna, resounding from every forest, every hill, every river, every ocean, every continent. By his will, it will be done. But Krishna, I don't know why you sent me to this horrible place where everyone's so covered with modes of ignorance and passion. How will they understand the pure teachings of Sriman Mahaprabhu? My dear Krishna, only if you empower me, and make my words understandable to them, will they take up this message, and then they'll become happy. And when all the living entities are happy, then the true Vaishnava's desire is fulfilled. So he was praying, Krishna, make me dance, make me dance, make me dance according to your will. And because of his humility, his perfect humility, from such humility comes tremendous yearning. He also prayed like that. Today, remembrance of you, came to me in a special, wonderful kind of way. I am your eternal servant, seeking to fulfill my Guru's mission. Tremendous yearning comes from that, because it's an open access to the spiritual world. It means no longer the blockage of our false ego is obstructing the complete flow of Krishna's mercy into our hearts. So for those who want to really please Krishna, we must serve the devotees in a humble state of mind. And from that humility, Krishna's empowerment will flow to and through us, and we can be effective in serving and pleasing and approaching the lotus feet of the Lord. It all begins with hearing and chanting, as Prahlad said. And when that hearing and chanting is complemented with humility, expressed as adhisevanam, serving those who are dear to the Lord, then the seed which is implanted in the heart by the spiritual master finds the heart becomes soft and fertile by humility. And then the seed can take root and grow. And as Narada Muni was explaining this morning, he will ultimately penetrate the coverings of the universe, cross beyond the viraja, and take shelter, as any creeper does, of a superior entity, the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. When the holy name of Krishna takes root within our hearts, then and then only can the form of Krishna become visible in our meditation. Then the qualities of Krishna will blossom in our minds. And then the pastimes of Krishna will become visible to our soul. And then ultimately that holy name, by the blessings of Sri Guru or Sri Gauranga, will manifest our own eternal relationship in service to those who are dear to the Lord. This is the process and perfection of adhisevanam. The fourth object of devotional service, quoted by Prahlad Maharaj in this verse in response to his father's question, what's the best learning that you have achieved in school? And this is it. Shravanam Kirtana Vishnam Smaranam Padasevanam Archanam Vadanam Dasyam Sakyam Hatam. Thank you very much. Are there any comments or questions? Please take this knowledge with you in the form of Srila Prabhupada's books. If you have Srila Prabhupada's books, please visit the book table and take some of Srila Prabhupada's books for others as a gift. Difference between Amma Nivedanam and what? Surrendering everything? Same thing, surrendering everything. But what does it mean to surrender everything? What does it mean, Sarvadhamma Pratitya? What do we have to surrender? We have all kinds of illusory concepts to surrender, but Krishna's not in. He's interested that we give them up. But what does he really want us to surrender? False ego. That's what Atmanivedanam means, surrender of the soul. By giving up false ego. And Sarva Dharma Pratyaja means, what do we have to surrender? Just the false concept that we have anything anyway, which means the false ego. Rupa Goswami explains that we should offer our dearmost possession to Krishna. But if we give away all our physical possessions, give away even our body, we haven't surrendered anything, unless and until we give up the false ego, the very misconception that we have anything anyway. It's that misconception that anything is ours, that we are anything other than the eternal servant of the servant of the servant. That's what Krishna wants us to surrender, as he says in 1866. And that's Atmanivedanam, complete surrender of the soul. I mean, it's forfeiting the illusion that you have anything to give other than the mercy of the Lord. Yeah, same thing. Atmanivedanam sarvadharma vyajaya. But what, bear in mind what Krishna is referring to. He's not meaning just give up your occupational duties or your possessions. He's give up your false conceptions and accept your actual identity, which is glorious. It's an eternal servant. Be servant, or be servant of those who are eternally dear to Krishna. How does only by developing your friendly, true ego? Ego just means identity. It's not good or bad inherently. It's good or bad depending on what you identify with. If you identify with service, that's true ego, friendly ego. I'm servant. To identify with control and enjoying and exploiting, that's false ego. It's unfriendly. It's undesirable. It's dark. How do you get rid of darkness? You can't fight it. You can't combat it. Just bring in the light. So the only way to overcome the darkness of false ego is to bring in the light, the illumination of Krishna consciousness, which is the brilliance of the service attitude. It dispels the darkness of false ego. It dispels all the illusions that you have these other occupations. I mean, you may have them temporarily as your service, raising family or whatever. But the darkness of misconception can only be overcome by introducing the light of true knowledge, Krishna consciousness, which awakens the soul to its actual, true, eternal, real constitutional function of service and dispels all the illusions of, you know, controlling and exploiting and trying to enjoy the things of this world. That's what Krishna wants, that we give up the darkness of this illusion and just acknowledge our actual glorious constitutional nature as servant of the servant of the servant. Yes, in a humble state of mind. The chanting of the Hare Krishna is like the rising of the sun. When you chant Hare Krishna with humility, the light of the spiritual world illumines the darkest recesses of your heart, and false ego is dispelled by the light and light of the spiritual world. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.